March 12, 2023, it's the Watch for Pedro show.
The thing that I'm finally I'm going to concentrate on is trying to write for the band. That I'm going to do first. And if it becomes necessary through the music to have another horn, then I'll do it, you know. Then if not, I'll just see the quartet. But I think it's important that first I get the music, you know, the type of music that we're going to play. I would only accept a financial loss if I was sure I was going to reap something musically, see? And as it is now, I don't have, the music doesn't call, demand another horn because it's all worked out between just the rhythm section and one horn. But as I say, if in a year, year two, if the things that we're going to start writing for the band, if they reach the point where they sound like they call for another horn, or if you need another horn to really express these ideas, then I have to get one, you know, even if it means making less. You know I am. Yeah?
Good. Thanks a lot, Joe.
Thank you.
Watford Pedro Show. Happy Sunday. Started off with John Coltrane talking about adding another horn in the band to Michael DeRuyter, October 26, 1963. I wonder if it's from an earlier spiel, and that's when Michael was talking about. I got the fucking monitor on. Fuck. 21 years, 10 months of doing this show, I'm still blowing fucking clams. Then we had part one of six. Curtis Lick Roberts, new album, May 99. This is part one of six, people. And you could tell, probably, that I'm not man alone because of those Skype engineers in Estonia. I got with me from, I think, parts all over the place, like Italy, New York City. Where you at, Charles?
I'm in New York also.
Okay, so two of them are New York City. Okay. Anyway, welcome aboard, Dean Roberts, Alan Lake, Charles Curtis.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. You. Love this record you gave me. Thanks so much. Now, I've had Dean on the show before, and I've had Alan on the show, but I ain't had you on the show yet, Charles. So let's go through your little musical journey. Can you bring your earliest musical recollection, please?
Whoa, my earliest musical recollections. Oh, my gosh. I grew up in Southern California, in Laguna Beach. Mike, did you grow up in California?
I came from Virginia when I was nine, from Norfolk, nor smoke nor drink. But you were in Orange County, behind the Orange curtain. My pop was a machinist, mate. If you look on a map, Vietnam's a lot closer to SoCal than Virginia. So that's why I moved out here. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so I was actually born in Southern California, but I had a German mother who was very, very involved in, German folk songs and Lutheran hymns and playing the zither. And so if you ask me what my earliest musical recollections are, that's what it would be. It would be my mother playing the zither and singing these very, very soulful, very melancholy folk songs and hymns.
Yeah, and there's an Orange County town called Anaheim, which translates German to our home.
Yes.
And when I'm thinking zither, I'm thinking fucking Third Man. Mr. Wells is getting that guy outside that cafe in Vienna to do the whole fucking soundtrack real ass loud. I think the dude toured on it for years after.
Mike, that is exactly the piece she used to play for us on the zither, the Third Man theme.
I love it.
That's it, man. I have a zither, and for years I have been planning to find the time to teach myself how to play a little bit of zither. I have one. It's a complicated instrument because, you have to you play the melody on the bottom five strings, and then you have these harmony strings that are more like a harp. So it's very complicated to play.
Sympathetic resonating strings, right?
Yeah, and then the resonating strings, yeah. But I don't think I'll ever in this lifetime make it to actually be able to play the Third Man theme. But,
Well, let me ask you this. So in the pad you grew up, there was a zither.
Oh, yes, she brought her zither from Germany.
But you never jumped on it?
Say that again?
You never jumped on it?
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, I got to ask that question. Kids get curious. What was the first album you bought with your own money?
Ooh, that's an interesting one. I think it was Pink Floyd Metal.
I remember that one. I didn't realize it was a fucking picture of an ear.
Well, it had that. The first side was this very long piece.
Echoes.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah, there's parts of it in that Live at Pompeii thing.
The Albatross. It's all about the Albatross, yeah. I think it was that, probably about 1977.
Yeah, if you open it up.
I started playing albums kind of late, so I was 17.
Gatefold. If you opened it up, Rick Wright looks like Charlie Manson. So anyway, what was the first gig you saw?
The first gig that I saw, oh, my God. Well, Mike, the thing here is that I came up mostly doing classical music, right? So I don't know. I mean, I honestly didn't see that many classical concerts when I was small. So I'm drawing a little bit of a blank
it's
here.
It's a Watt from Tebow show. There's no hard questions. There's no wrong answers.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been going up to Los Angeles from Laguna Beach to hear something or other, probably some kind of Young Musicians Foundation event where, you know, a youth orchestra was playing, something like that.
Okay, music is music, so to me it's okay. You don't have to be a fucking Alice Cooper at the fucking Forum. Blue Oyster Cult at the Long Beach.
It was not that, that's for
sure. Or like
sure.
With me and D. Boone, T-Rex at the Long Beach Auditorium when we were 14 years old, 1973.
Okay, but Mike, because I'm talking to you now for the first time ever, I want to ask you where Firehose played in a – because I went to a show of yours. It was in a guitar store in Santa Monica, and they had a venue in back.
Yeah, it's called McCabe's.
McCabe's or something
Doc
like that?
Watson, yeah, all that acoustic stuff, but it got repurposed for gigs. But anyway, I want to keep this story on you because we only got so many things, and people hear fucking about me for 21 years, 10 months now. So, Charles, what about at school? Were you in the marching band or choir or shit like that?
Yes, yes. In fact, I played trombone at that time.
Bass clef. So, how did you get on the bone?
Well, I don't know. I like the fact that you could slide on it and you could use the toilet plunger as a wah. And so I got into trombone very early in elementary school. And yeah, bass clef. So it was easy for me, a little bit of tenor clef. And then I dropped the trombone because they made me play bass trombone and it was too heavy. I couldn't hold it in my hand on my shoulder. So I dropped that. And then it was just cello.
You know, I'm trying to learn fucking euphonium, and you say mouthpiece 12C is the. Who's making all that racket, Dean? Fuck.
Yes, sir.
Cállate. It's Espanol for fucking shut up. Okay. So, you're in. What kind of band? Is it like the concert band where you sit in chairs, or is it the marching band?
I don't think I ever marched with the trombone.
Okay.
Yeah, but I also played, you know, in church. I sang in church, so, you know, there was that whole side of it also.
A lot of rock and roll singers came out of the church.
Sure.
And also a lot of soul singers like Aretha and stuff.
Yeah, and country too, of course. Yeah,
absolute Elvis. I've been, in fact, the church in Tupelo, right?
Uh-huh.
Where he learned how to sing like that.
So what
about the thing after school? I'm not talking graduating. I'm talking about in the afternoon where they do the garage band, the basement band, the bedroom band. Now, you're from the time like me. You know, I'm 65 years old, so they didn't really have ska yet. Because remember, ska is where the brass guys could finally play with rock and rollers.
Mm.
Did you do that?
No. In fact, the idea of, you know, playing in a band and making your own music – that didn't happen until I was in my early 20s when I was already in New York. I mean, you have to understand, I was very orthodox classical music, just, you know, very much within that world, that kind of disciplined world. So after school, it was just practicing the cello in the back room of my house if I wasn't going down to the beach to surf a little bit before it got dark.
Okay. And so what about that first band? It was a college band, right?
No, I was at Juilliard, and I had dropped out of Juilliard, and I was living with, I was renting a room on the Upper West Side from the mother of somebody who was in a band. The band was called You Suck, and she saw that I played the cello, and she said to me, "We are playing at CBGB on Saturday, and you are going to be there, and you're going to play." And she said this so forcefully that I had no option but to show up and play. I said, okay, I'll be there with my cello. You tell me what to do. And that was the first band I played in, was You Suck.
Wasn't there a trippy cello band here in SoCal called Fat and Fucked Up?
Never heard of them.
Yeah, there was. Maybe a couple cellos. But they stayed weird. They didn't turn into an ELO thing. There were some ladies who would dress goth in New York City that played cellos.
What were
their names? Yeah, something with an R.
Rasputins, something
that's
like
it,
that?
That's it.
Yeah, but I've always stayed away from that stuff. It was too theatrical or too, I don't know, something.
That's all right. I wasn't trying to make a competition. I was just trying to reference. The drama, the cello, because it's tuned in fifths, but it's got, you know, bass clef to treble. It's got such a wide range. It's an incredible instrument, yeah. Here, I want to play part two of this record you got with Alan Charles.
Thank you. Make it rain like a gypsy with your miracle jar. Make it rain, wine and whiskey on this ritual and ceremony. Take away our pain. Make it rain for the roses. Bring down Happy Jack and Holy Moses. Heaven, make it rain. Make it rain for the hours. Come on, Cousin Jackie, bring the showers. Wash us down the drain. We'll be right back.
I read one last night in Baltimore for Edgar Allan Poe, because that was fitting. We were in the old buildings of Baltimore, and then I'll switch to the political poem. This was Hey, Buffalo Bebop Blues, four songs, and it was an old San Francisco and the Baltimore Eclipse. Now it's for the Edgar Allan Poe. I got shit. And the Toxic Waste, Richard Nottingham, Bowery Bombs, Star Tattoo in January from the Ancient Land, an Age of Apostasy. So, was Poe afraid on these same brick streets tonight in Baltimore? Was he afraid of the fluorescent eyes of dogs, the raven's reflection, the rat's scat through sawdust in Holland's Market, the smell of rot and burlap thick as fur? Afraid of roaches, disease, of poverty, loud poverty, boom box, crackle crap, whip, poor ponies pulling carts full of greens up Green Street, overloaded with greed. Afraid of the thick sky over foggy tavern doors on Cross Street, cloud-draped, rummaged crimson cloak threading from the hill down to curling dark water bay. Afraid of the statues with iron poet capes flowing into formal rapture and cast hollow spirits looking down cold upon those animated walking and talking past old doorways. Afraid of the wine, the drugs, the vault of alcoholic shorelines, ragged fault, floating in a dream grave. Afraid to yell, smug disciples repeating versions of hell. The whirl of a wash, a tangled thread, sets an alarm that turns to dread, makes the vision flow inside into creation, and how such grace is fed. Life is a poor host, grabbing guests who came, swirling great pleated sheets, wrapping the stars, leaving streaming party coils to their last cars, some on twilight's slightly twisted cane.
In the belfry. Yeah.
Watch from Pedro show. Start off that chunk of music with part 2 of 6 of this, it's called May 99, Curtis Lick Roberts. Then Guided by Voices, Cousin Jackie, La La Land, right? Bob Pollard. Every other month, you got to have a new album, right? This man puts the P in prolific, people. Fuck. Here's a title, huh? Noisuka with designed by narcissistic pricks in the Silicon Valley, assembled by suicidal wage slaves in Asia. Yeah. And then Spotsky with Past the Mini Pipes. This is something he recorded in Hermosa Beach at Media Art in 1978. Studio he helped put together. Miss Spotsky, big time. Love that man. Charlie Plymell, myself, August 9th, 2008, Philadelphia, Fishtown Park. Was Poe Afraid, me backing up Charlie on bass and him reading one of his poems. Hubert Selby Jr. Infants, brand new band out of Dublin, Ireland. Build Me a Monster. And finally, Bombas Prennan with Rogue Wave. So, Charles, so you played this gig at CBGB.
Yeah.
With You Suck. And was it a failure, a success?
Well, the whole idea of that band was to be a failure, so it was inevitably a success because it was supposed to be a failure. And it was a very large assortment of people, and it was kind of like the group out of which grew the band King Missile.
Oh, I remember them cats.
Yeah, and I was actually, believe it or not, I was actually a founding member of King Missile. I was one of three. It was John S. Hall, Dog Bowl, and me. But before we could do very much, I had quit because I thought the band was so ridiculous. You know, we were doing a song called World War III is a Giant Ice Cream Cone. And I couldn't really relate to it. But I came back into the band later and was in and out of King Missile over many years, actually. But that started with You Suck.
Okay. Now, how do you meet Alan? How do you meet Dane?
Right. Yeah, I've been trying to figure this out, and right about the same time as my little incursion into, you know, the rock and roll, you know, weirdo rock scene, which I have to say was incredibly beneficial to me musically. I mean, I was really astonished by the musicianship of the people that I was suddenly playing with and being around. But around the same time, I became involved with the music of Lamont Young and also with Lamont as a person and sort of studying with him and working on his music. And it must have been in...
I've been to the Dream House. I spent about
the
two
Dream
or three
House.
Hours. It was like a July or an August, so it was sweaty as a motherfucker.
Yeah. So I think it was in connection with that. It must have been at an event.
Yeah, it was a concert that I don't know if Lamont was performing. It might have been a tape concert of one of his former colleagues, like Angus MacLeese or Terry Jennings. Mm-hmm. And I met you and Michael Schumacher at the same time, and it was Donald Miller from Borba Magus, I think, who introduced us.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
And how's Dean fitting?
And that's a long time ago. That's probably 1989 or 90.
I think earlier, Alan, I think 88 maybe.
Really?
Or early 89.
Maybe it could have been, yeah, it could have been.
Yeah.
And how's
I don't
Dean,
know if
how
I
does,
knew Donald how, until 89.
How does Dean
but it could
fit
have been
in? How does Dean fit in? Not to like, be very interested in that tiny fucking little bit of minutia. But.
Well, my first recollection of Dean was a show at the Cooler where Dean did a very beautiful solo set. And I think I might have met Dean before that, but that's the first time I heard Dean. And I just remember the visual image of Dean in the middle of the stage, sitting down, holding maybe a Telecaster. I'm not sure now, but a kind of a diminutive figure in the middle of the stage playing. I don't remember what it sounded like, but it was very compelling and very, very focused and very beautiful. But I think we might have met a little bit before that, Dean.
I remember that Cooler pad. It was like Chelsea or something, that Lower West Side.
14th Street.
Yeah. It was the meatpacking district.
There. Yeah, yeah. Somewhere between Christopher Street and Chelsea Hotel.
Yeah.
And there was like kind of avant-garde, right? Thurston played there all the time.
Yeah. That's how it was. I think it would have been 95, I think. 1995. Mm-hmm. And there was this crazy collection of people that were people from the free jazz scene and rock, noise rock scene converging. So there was the No Neck Blues Band, my band, Thaler, and Thurston, and Rashid Ali, and all of these incredible musicians that all converging there on quite a regular. It was quite a special place that, and that was my introduction into the New York music scene. And then I think, if I remember correctly, I've been trying to figure this out through different methods of forensic memory research. But I think that Charles and Alan and I all met there with Tim Barnes.
He was
the catalyst.
Well, I had met you a little before that, Dean, because when Thella came over from New Zealand to tour, I was on one of those shows playing duo with Lauren.
That's right.
Honors. Yes. In Boston.
It was you and Lauren and Kristen and Tom Segal.
Right.
Tom Segal, Whiteout.
It's like a triple bill. So that would have been, I think that would have been the first time I met you. But then it probably wasn't too long after that, because you sort of stayed in New York, right?
Yeah.
After that tour.
Yeah, I stayed for like a year or nearly 2 years after that. That's what I can remember from how we actually established our friendships and our music working relationships.
And what happened with the cooler? It ended up shutting down, right?
Yeah, probably early 2000s. Very early. Yeah.
And what took its place? Tonic?
Yeah, for a while.
And then something called the Stone, right?
Yeah, that was.
Because I always think of the Stone up the city, but I know New York City had its own version. And that's kind of a John Zorn trip, right?
That one is entirely John. John runs that one, yeah.
Well, he had something to do with Tonic also, I think. But I don't think so much the cooler.
He booked it for a while, kind of early on, but it's. I think people have overstated how much he had to do with it.
I think he sort of got on people's radars.
Can
I ask you something, Alan?
He was doing there, but.
Can I ask you something, Alan? How does Roulette fit into all that scene?
Well, Roulette has been going longer than any of the.
Yeah, and it's still going,
like,
right?
The original place, the kind of like a loft thing for free improv.
Not counting
the kind of free jazz lofts earlier in the 70s. And that's run by the guy Jim Staley, who's a trombonist, speaking of trombone. And it's still going. And he was running it out of his own living space for a long time, and now he's got a different space in Brooklyn.
John Coltrane, sideman on a prestige record with J.J. Johnson, Bone Man. God, he even made one with a tuba guy. I mean, anything for junk, right?
Yeah.
Glad he got healed from that fucking shit. So anyway, you guys all three meet at this kind of scene, and I want to get into, we're almost out of time here, but in the next hour, I want to get into, like, who gets all Einstein and says, let's make a power trio record. Okay? So I want you to fucking,
I want you
to commiserate on that, all right? Put on your thinking hats, your tinfoil shit. And people, it's the end of March 13th, 2023 edition of Watt Pigo Show. No, it isn't.
Today's the 12th.
Yeah, it is the 12th. Yeah. My pop would say, boy, you'd fuck up a two-car cracker funeral. Yep. Sorry. Hold tight for hour two. March 12th, 2023. It's the second hour. Watt Pigo Show. Watch for Pedro Show. Start off the second hour, part three of six. May 99 is the name of the piece. Curtis Lick Roberts is the name of the trio behind it. Alexander Hack after that, out of Berlin. Tote Kammer is part of his big piece on this fictional young man. It's a trippy piece. Alexander also plays with his wife. They got Praj. Hack. Picciotto. Sorry. Picciotto. Fucking idiot. What? Stunato, huh? I learned this from my grandpa. This is saying grandpa. He was one of their words for stupid is out of tune, right? Stunato, out of tune.
Yeah.
Especially for our line of work, right? Damon Smith and Pandelis Karyogas with Entanglement and Have a Nice Life, the demo of I'm Dr. House. Okay, so you guys think about it. How'd you come up with this idea for fucking May 99?
Well, we just organized a tour in Germany and Belgium, Netherlands, I think. It's very hard to remember, actually. But we did.
You're saying you organized a tour before you guys even played together?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. We didn't play together in New York at all before that tour.
Really?
And the idea of the tour was to just improvise every night with Santone and Huron.
Why did you stop at three guys? Why didn't you go for 12? I've heard that We Jammy Kano is not just a slogan.
Yeah,
it's true.
It's actually a way of life.
Right. So yeah, we had a rental car, and we just went on the road and did that, and we recorded everything. I think every concert we recorded somehow, either from DAT tapes or cassette tapes or from my Roland hard disk recorder, but we recorded everything, and so we had amassed quite a lot of music, and it wasn't just until recently that we were able to go back through those tapes, and Alan went back through all of these cassette tapes and found some pieces of different live concerts that we did on that trip, and it was a great trip. And one of the anecdotes that I remember the most from that trip was that we were often staying in the same apartment, and we had this conversation about eating. One night, we had a conversation about eating bananas, because I had heard this myth that if you eat bananas before going to sleep, because of the potassium content of the bananas, it makes you have very psychedelic, strange dreams. And so we made this challenge where we said, okay, we'll all eat a banana before we go to sleep. And then tomorrow morning, Charles proposed this idea that in the morning we have breakfast together and we will share our whatever happened in our psychedelic dreams from the night before. We're not taking drugs or anything, just eating bananas. And I remember that Alan said that his dream was that he had a dream that the band Hanson was shooting a music video on his parents' front lawn.
Well. Like Rudy Van Gelder's first recording studio was his parents' living room, right?
Yeah,
Imagine that shit.
Yes, I read a book recently about Rudy Van Gelder. It was interesting.
Hackensack, right? Across the river River.
And then we did this. The majority of our tour was a lot of time spent in Amsterdam at the VPRO radio studios, and we did a session there. And correct me if I'm wrong, Alan, is it some of that VPRO session on the record?
Well, that's entirely what it is. That's
it is mainly.
That's what the whole record is made of. It's.
I thought it was in Hilversum.
We recorded three different pieces for that, and the record is sort of kind of stitched together from excerpts.
I thought you know
the VPRO session.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did one of those sessions. I thought it was in Hilversum, which is like Holland's Hollywood, right? It's not too far from Amsterdam. Anyway, let me play part four.
Thank you.
Afropivo show. That chunk of music started off with part 4 or 6, May 99. Curtis Lake Roberts. Then If Bawana. This is up the river, right? Chester, New York. Al Margolis. Him and Walter Wright just gave me some new stuff for a new El Cabong collab. I'm going to use the string side of Brian May. May. Day. Sorry, scusi. ESP Summer, Simple Eye, and then finally Jad Fair, Samuel Locke Ward, brand new album from them. And this song's Time Where You Are. Can you remember the first gig of this tour?
Yes.
Bring.
It was in Munich at a club that used to be a famous jazz club. I forget what it's called now, but it used to be called Die Unterfahrt. And and that was the first gig because we met up right there. And it was a good gig, actually, because we had no idea what we were doing. We were just throwing things together and, you know, completely without a plan. And, that was the first gig.
There was no discussion.
I don't think so.
Well, yeah, I mean, not beyond the basic idea of playing with the sign, you know, there's this whole idea of like playing inside a sign tone environment is sort of borrowed from Lamont Young. That was something that he did. And so this was kind of us doing it, but with electric guitars and a cello instead of, you know, Lamont would usually have vocals and,
Lamont started out as a
horn, horn instruments, I think, usually.
Yeah. Lamont started out as a sax man, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then he got into that well-tempered thing, well-tempered tuning or something, just tonation. Big, it ended up fat chords on the 7th floor of that Biltmore. I sweated to death, but it was a trip. I will say that. I'm trying to relate, like, when the first time I did a gig with Jandek, he didn't discuss anything until, like, 5 minutes before we go on. He says, so what are we going to do? And he looked, at the drummer. The drummer was like 20 years younger than us. He says, you know, Cream, you know, Ginger Baker? And the guy, maybe my dad does. And I said, oh, you want me to play like Jack Bruce? He says, yeah, maybe. And that was it. he did show me a box, like a stomp box. He says, I'm going to try to use one of these. I said, oh, okay.
Yeah, when I played with him, he just said, play aggressive.
Oh, okay. Yeah, like, so some people are like that, right? We're not going to talk about it. We're just going to do.
Rudolf Craig, I said, what's the structure of this piece when we were in the recording studio? And he said, 5 minutes.
I remember Alan telling me this story, Alan, about playing with Rudolf Gray, and he would just say,
Red Transistor,
say,
right?
What's the piece? And he would just say, just start slow and build.
I think he wrote a bio on Ed Wood.
Yeah.
Interesting man. Greg Ginn put out some of his records, and that's where I met him.
Right.
Actually, very interesting guy. I liked him a lot. Yeah. So that first gig was just feeling it out, right?
I think so. You know, and I don't really remember any discussion in any way. Nobody would have asked anyone else, what are we doing? Because nobody had the authority to say, oh, let's do such and such. It was really just, I mean, particularly for me, because I was also using a little dictaphone and I was using cassette tapes from our friend Jeff Perkins. And I was, you know, running things fast forward and then backwards. And I had a number of devices and I didn't really know what I was going to do with them. So it was sort of like a workshop, you know, it was sort of like get this stuff out there and connect it up and see what happens. That was what that first gig was like.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think everyone kind of came with things they wanted to try out, but it was just a matter of putting it into practice.
Yeah. You know, throwing it against the bulkhead. See, happens. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, March 12, 2023, edition Wap Peter. So special guests, Alan Lick, Charles Curtis, Dean Roberts. Hold tight for hour three. March 12, 2023, it's the third hour Wap for Peter show. Watt for Pedro show. Start off the third hour with part 5 of 6, May 99. It's a new album by Charles Curtis, Alan Lick, Dean Roberts. Then we had 99 Letters, Maka Fushigi. Come in this side. Asshole. I ruin all kinds of people's languages, people, even my own. So I'm dearly sorry about that. So let me get this straight, guys. Charles, Alan, Dean. This record actually is several gigs, all like kind of edited together.
No, it's just the one session at VPRO.
Okay, okay.
The parts
okay.
are different. We did like 3 different pieces for that session.
Okay, so that's what's edited together.
Yeah.
Okay, okay. But how long down the road was that gig? Was it in the beginning, middle of the tour, end of the tour?
It was towards the end, I think.
Okay,
right?
So what I'm saying is it could benefit from the experience of all the gigs before that, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like you introducing all your things, well, because you've been doing that now, and you've been getting certain reactions from the other two guys in the band. I'm talking to you, Charles. And so, right, there comes, organically, you guys kind of grew into a group, right, an ensemble.
I think the one difference would have been that the concerts would have been like a full hour at least, kind of nonstop. And the VPRO session was, I think, each piece was 20 or 10 or 15 minutes.
That might have been the reason for that. You know,
yeah. Well, I think even that, I think they edited into a much shorter program because I think I also have a cassette somewhere of the actual radio program that they broadcast. And there's some interviews with us interspersed with excerpts from what we recorded. So I don't think they ever broadcast these pieces, in their full, duration.
Now, there was no discussion before that first gig, but as the gigs went on, did you guys start talking about what you guys were doing besides banana dreams and shit?
Well, I'd like to say that I think that we were doing very different kinds of gigs as the tour advanced. There were shows where we would each start with a solo and then play together. There were gigs, as Alan just mentioned, where we explicitly decided to play continuously for an hour or more, maybe hour and a half, so that it would be more like, almost like a sound environment, and that the audience would be coming in and maybe going out and coming back. And so we were doing a lot of different things. I don't think it was a progression towards more and more, agreement on what we're going to be doing as a group. I think that's my impression. That's my recollection of it, is that it kept that very nice feeling of open-endedness and kind of coming back to that word, it felt like a sort of a workshop, like we're up there trying things. That's my recollection. I don't know. Well, how do you feel about that, Dean?
I agree. I think that, some of the discussions that we had on our transits on the road were about these ideas of for me personally, I was really interested in the groups like Musica Electronica, Viva, Nuovo Consonanza, and AMM, and this idea that a concert is just a staging of a situation. And also, of course, John Cage's concepts of how Cage and Tudor did these stagings of events, that our approach in a way was that we weren't like a touring rock band or anything, but we were creating a kind of or staging a kind of event that could be like an installation or could be considered, like Charles said, that, you know, people could walk in and out. And a lot of this reminds me now that you mentioned Jeff Perkins was because we sort of started to work with this sort of concept a bit with Jeff about the idea of the idea of this sort of like, it's kind of eternal performance that, what defines a performance or a concert, and being an improvising musician, the way that you treat the situation and the way that you participate in a situation is somehow a different method to being a concert performer, I guess.
Yeah,
if that makes some kind of sense.
No, it makes real good sense and opens up a lot of fucking wondering for me. Thank you so much, Dean. I want to play the last part, part 6 of 6. Thank you. White for Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Started the chunk off with May 99, part 6 of 6. Charles Curtis, Alan Lick, Dean Roberts. Then we had Stefano Pelia out of Bologna, Healing Memories. Finally, Andrea Belfi from Verona, Italy, Berlin now these days. And this is how I met Dean Roberts. Tell Andrea.
Live I'm from so Oregon. Happy that you played both those guys are very good friends. And
yeah, live from Oregon, so Torino on December 1, 2019. And it's through those two guys playing with the Manil Sonia de Minayo is how I got to meet Dean. Yeah. And so this is a 24-year-old recording, correct?
Yes.
Is there plans for other 24-year-old stuff?
Well, there's a if you pre-order it from Blank Forms, it comes with a cassette from the same tour in recording from Bremen.
And is there a website people can go to there?
Yeah, blankforms.org.
Okay, blanknkforms.org, people. Check that out. And now what about in the 24 years since? Have you guys played together?
No.
No.
Well, we did this 24-hour concert when we got back, I think, or maybe a couple months after we got back.
Yes.
Where we played three different venues, one Tonic in the afternoon, and then Jeff Perkins Loft in the evening, and then in a park outdoors, sort of in the Wall Street area, I think, like in the very early morning, like 5 a.m. or something.
And
so it was 24 hours continuous, but it was, you know, the better part.
Within 24 hours, yeah. Now, yeah. No plans to put any of that out?
I don't know if we recorded it.
That's not recorded. I think if anything, the plan is for us to get together again and follow up 24 years later.
I was going to say, is there a chance of doing that without it being some kind of Fonzie Potsy Happy Days bullshit kind of thing?
I would like it to be a Fonzie Potsy Happy Days bullshit.
I remember my pop, when that TV show came on, my pop said to me, boy, those were not happy days. I didn't mean to flush the punch bowl. I did not mean to flush the punch bowl. But more than sentimental nostalgia. I mean, you guys had a good time on that tour, but just the chemistry you dug, and you'd like to revive that?
Yeah, definitely. Sure. I think it would be really different as well, because our trajectories have been really different since then. I was 27 years old then, and I think that somehow the way that music has evolved for me in the practice that has been involved for music for me has become different. But in the whole time with Charles and Alan, there has been an alignment in our kind of thinking. And that I'm not a classical musician, and I'm not a great guitarist or singer or anything like that. But somehow we have maintained our friendship over those years in terms of our interests, common interests, in that we're three geeks.
I think it'd be interesting. And here's what I'm putting out. Here's my invite. You guys come together and record again. Will you come on the show and play it and talk about it? I think that'd be a trip. I'd love it.
Of course. It'd
okay.
Be amazing.
Okay. Deal then, okay? Charles, Alan, Dean, please make it happen. Please. Bring.
We will. Okay. I'm sure we will. Thank you.
I love his record, man, and I can't wait to hear what happens 24 years later. Thank you so much for coming on. Can't wait to have you back. People, it's been the March 12, 2023 edition of Why Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.